This is the CSIS Global Health Interview Series at www.smartglobalhealth.org.
Hello and welcome. Today we are here with Captain James Turbush, the command surgeon for the 4th Fleet and U.S. Naval Forces Southern Command. Captain Turbush has a long and very prestigious background. He has his medical degree as well as his master's in public health. He's been in 4 years of private practice as well as volunteering in Operations Desert Shield and Desert Storm. From 2006 to 2009, he was the command surgeon to North American Aerospace Defense Command and the U.S. Northern Command. So we're here today to talk about his role as command surgeon of the 4th Fleet and U.S. Naval Forces Southern Command, which you may know have some medical stability operations and humanitarian assistance programs. So welcome, Captain Turbush. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Regarding your position with the 4th Fleet and U.S. Naval Forces Southern Command, what exactly is your role and responsibility as the top medical officer, the command surgeon?
Sure. Well, the role of our command, of course, is to plan for and execute these various missions for United States Southern Command. So it might be easier to actually tell you what we don't do. We don't do man, train, and equip. That's the role of the services. We don't do strategy and policy. Those are the jobs of higher headquarters, if you will. SOUTHCOM, of course, gives us our mission, and we then execute and carry out those missions on behalf of United States Southern Command.
All right, thank you. And let's talk about a specific mission. Continuing Promise 2010 is one that the 4th Fleet is planning and soon to be conducting. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. And in the name is Continuing Promise, which would seem to indicate that we go back. And I think that's an important part of the Continuing Promise series of missions, is that we go back to the region and frequently to the countries. This will be our fourth visit to some of the countries that we plan to visit. And between July and November in 2010, the USS Wasp, which is an amphibious aircraft carrier, large, very capable ship with a tremendous logistical capability, will be visiting 8 countries over 80 days in port in order to provide training and support and equipment and medical services and engineering services as well to these host nations and in collaboration with their governments and our partners.
Great. And can you just mention some of the countries that Continuing Promise will be visiting, and perhaps how having with you an amphibious aircraft carrier such as the USS Wasp helps with those humanitarian missions?
Sure. You probably know the mission more from our other capable platform, which are the hospital ships. There are two hospital ships, one on each coast. The Mercy on the West Coast, the Comfort on the East Coast, and the USNS Comfort just finished her mission about 2 months ago, where they also visited a number of countries and provided a tremendous amount of medical care and logistical support and engineering support. They saw over 100,000 patient visits and 1,500 surgeries. This mission is different because the platform is different, and in part this different capability brings different skill sets and different opportunities. For one thing, because of the nature of the ship, we'll be able to get in much closer and more frequently in port. Because of the large flat deck, we'll have the opportunity to use helicopter support for ferrying people and equipment to and from the ship. In addition, there is a large well deck, a large space below the main deck where there are landing craft, amphibious landing craft that can easily, again, take people and equipment back and forth to shore, and then provides also a huge opportunity for donated goods and supplies and medical equipment, all part of Project Handclasp, as an example. So big ship, different capabilities, and slightly different focus to the mission.
Okay, thank you. And with all this manpower and medical equipment, how does the U.S. WASP coordinate with current host countries, per se? Let's say you're going to Nicaragua, NGOs that may be on the ground in Nicaragua, or the government, or, you know, USAID or U.S. government agencies that may already be there and have a large amount of knowledge.
Sure, Elizabeth. And that was actually the point of the visit to D.C. last week, where we went around and visited a number of offices, not only within Department of Defense, but State Department, USAID, Health and Human Services. We visited the Public Health Service out in Rockville, and then also had the opportunity to visit and speak with some of our potential NGO partners. So there was that socialization of the proposed mission up front to hopefully achieve some level of cooperation and collaboration. The other thing we'll do is in December, a small team of us, myself included, will go and visit the eight countries that have been selected for continuing Promise 10, and we'll visit with the U.S. Embassy there, the MIL group, military groups at each embassy. There will be interaction with the country team, USAID reps, and then we also hope to visit with Ministry of Health and make some site surveys, perhaps at some hospitals or some other locations, to determine what it is that the host nation would actually like for us to do. What are their health care priorities?
And this continuing premise, how long is that mission for, and how long are you approximately at each country?
Sure. In fact, I have the scheme of maneuver here in front of me. It runs July through November of 2010, and so a total of 4 months. So it's a long-ish deployment. Eight countries, as I mentioned, that's still somewhat in flux. Changes, but it's in Central America, Northern South America, and in the Caribbean. We do visit Haiti, and approximately, 84 port days, and it'll be a really good a good deployment.
Great, thank you. And just bringing this back to also your past experience as the command surgeon for the United States Northern Command, which is actually responsible kind of for the area of the United States. How can you see, where do you see the connection of health, stability, and national defense? How do you see going to these countries in Central and Latin America and providing them with humanitarian assistance? How do you see in the long term that actually contributing to the defense of the United States as well as the health?
Well, sure, and I'm glad you asked that question, because that's an important part to remember, that fundamentally this is a training mission, and it's a training mission for U.S. forces, for DOD, and in this case particularly the Navy, to get better at one of our core missions, which is humanitarian assistance and disaster response. I'll abbreviate that as HADR. HADR is one of our core missions and contributes to the overall defense of the nation. We have the opportunity to reach out rapidly with security, communications, logistics, and healthcare capabilities to other countries in the region, and this does help provide for stability. So this is a major effort of not just Department of Defense, but the United States. So these missions help build our capability. But there's another synergy here, and that's the point that I wanted to highlight, is that between the Homeland Defense mission and this HADR mission that I cited, we have the opportunity for some incredible synergies. It turns out that a study was done at NORTHCOM over the last 2.5-3 years that looked at those skills to train and equip for the Homeland Defense mission, what we call defense support to civil authorities. It's what we do in a disaster to support FEMA and others. And then we looked at the requirements to do HADR, and we found that with very few exceptions, in fact, there were a very small percentage that were not exactly overlapping. And so the point I'd like to make in this is that there are incredible synergies between preparations to have DOD respond to a disaster in the homeland and for DOD to respond to a disaster overseas. If we train well for one and equip well for one, we're also training well and equipping well for the other.
Great, great. Thank you. And building off of that, as a training purpose, how do you ensure that when you go to these countries that you are bringing the correct medical equipment or services that are appropriate and that can contribute to not only a training purpose, but actually the public health of the country and of those citizens?
Right, right. Well, you just ask a very complicated question in very few words. And I would say that there's at least three ways that we do that. The first way is through these pre-deployment site surveys, where we actually visit the countries and determine from host nation representatives what it is that they want and what's most useful to them. The second way is that we have, of course, a library of lessons learned from previous CP missions. So going back, a number of years, four or more years, we have lessons learned from what worked and what didn't, what was useful and what was not, what were the really big items that we could have brought more of. And as an example, women's health care and dentists were always in great demand. Another capability that the host nations always asked for more of was veterinary services. But the third answer to your question might be something that we are hopefully getting better at, which are assessments. And this would be after the ship leaves and after the mission is over, to go back in and do some real-world assessments to determine what actually contributes to longer-term improvement in health care of the nation that we visited, or alternatively, what actions did we undertake that support longer-term national level objectives. So these are assessments that would probably be done, not by Fourth Fleet. We wouldn't be grading our own homework, but by another group that would be able to look at some of the higher level objectives and do these missions, answer the mail.
I just want to touch on a little bit of a sensitive subject, and that is your missions often, as humanitarian missions, would need to coordinate with not-for-profits or non-governmental organizations. How have you, in your experience or planning for your upcoming 2010 Continuing Promise, how have you come across that, and where have you found common ground?
Sure. Well, I can actually kind of put my NGO hat on, because I worked with an NGO off and on overseas for quite a long period of time. But let me just say that there are some cultural concerns which will be difficult to overcome, and then there are some other concerns that we can reasonably address. Some NGOs will choose to work with the U.S. military, and some don't. That is perhaps based on their history and their perception of Department of Defense and so on. There are other NGOs that would like to work with the U.S. government more closely, but find that either locally or even globally, an association with Department of Defense in some contested areas, they believe puts them at risk. And by that, I mean that sometimes by being in the same locale as a military unit, that they are perceived then as being a combatant, and that puts their volunteer workers at risk. We understand that, and that has been the choice of some NGOs. But then there's another group of NGOs that have a long and continuing and fruitful partnership with the U.S. government, and specifically with DOD. These partners have been part of Continuing Promise mission for, say, 3 or 4 years now, and they do a great job. The mission this year is on a warship. It's on a Gray Hull. And so it will be interesting to see civilian health care providers and public health service and Navy doctors and nurses coming off of this ship and going ashore. We actually find that there have been a number of NGOs that have been eager to participate with us, and we seem to have at least for the current mission and future missions to have overcome those objections.
Thank you so much, Captain Trebush, for speaking with us again. You also came and had an event here at CSIS a week ago, and we greatly appreciated you sharing your in-depth knowledge of the subject, and really appreciate working with you. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Elizabeth, and it was a real pleasure and honor to be able to come and speak at CSIS and to talk with you today.
And if you'd like to learn more about this, you can see our website, www.smartglobalhealth.org.